Hello, everyone, and welcome to Motos and Friends, the podcast brought to you by the editors at Ultimate Motorcycling. My name is Arthur Coldwells. This week's first segment is brought to you by editors Don Williams and Nick DeSena. Don recently returned from Spain, where he rode the new 2024 Husqvarna Svartpilen 801. Performance comes in many forms, and certainly the Svartpilen has a unique take on things, while also delivering amazing speed. It's a premium motorcycle with lots of high-end features and a unique, almost steampunk look to it, and it makes it a real standout. It's fast and user-friendly, and if doing things a little differently appeals to you, then Don's take on the new Husqvarna will certainly be of interest. Motos and Friends is brought to you by Arai Helmets. Arai is obsessed with every detail, even those that are unseen. There is such a thing as the Arai difference. For instance, if your experience has been that helmets are hard to get on, then try the Arai Contour X. It's been designed with a wider bottom opening for easier on and off. Once on, you'll be impressed at the amazing comfort of the Contour X, especially if you're into long-distance touring. If you're into dual sport, then you'll want to check out the new Arai XD5. It's a completely redesigned helmet, and as with everything from Arai, every improvement is made with a priority for protection. One of the major changes is the new VAS-A visor system. It's been derived from the one originally developed for the Corsair X. The new visor is designed to maximize surface area to glance off impact energy, while at the same time offering easy installation and removal of the visor and peak. So, get to your local dealer and try out the full range of Arai helmets. You'll be instantly amazed at the fit and all-day comfort of any Arai helmet. You should also check out AraiAmericas.com if you want to learn more. If you've ever found yourself away from home and pining for a motorcycle ride, then Twisted Road just might be the answer. In this second segment, TJ Adams chats with Austin Rothbard. He's the creator of the app that he describes as the Airbnb of motorcycling. Although your first take might be skepticism that anyone would want to rent out their precious motorcycle, it turns out that there are plenty of people not only willing to do so, but who are doing it regularly. The app has been around since 2017, so it's an idea that seems to be pretty well evolved. So, from all of us here at Ultimate Motorcycling, we hope you enjoyed this episode.
Okay, so this is the Moto and Friends podcast. Today I'm joined by Don Williams, editor-in-chief, fearless leader of Ultimate Motorcycling Magazine. And he just got done riding the 2024 Husqvarna Svartpilen 801. So anyway, go ahead and tell us where you were, what you did, and, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay, the first thing I want to tell everybody is that Svartpilen, to the Swedish native speakers like me, we know that it means black arrow. And then the Vitpilen, which is the other version of the Husqvarna line of these sort of steampunk bikes, is white arrow. So just wanted to throw that out there because people hear that name and they may not know what it means. But the Svartpilen is black arrow. The Vitpilen is white arrow. And generally speaking, that's because one's a black bike and the other is a white bike. Although they have had blue ones without changing the name. So you never know. But anyway, that's the bike I rode, and it's based on the 790 Duke, which has been around for quite a while, although it did disappear a bit around COVID days, but it's back. And basically, this is a sport bike that gets a style treatment. Husqvarna likes to call it the scrambler inspired, which is kind of funny because it's not a scrambler and it's not intended to be a scrambler, even though they in their press photos, they showed, you know, when they first showed the bike, they showed the bike being ridden in the dirt. And it can be ridden in the dirt, just like any bike can be ridden in the dirt. We've all seen the Goldwing videos that the guy did where he was like hill climbing and stuff. But this is a street bike. So just want to get that out of the way, that the bike, I know I only rode it on the street, even though it has the Pirelli MT60 RS tires on it, it's designed to be a street bike. Just like the KTM 790 Duke.
The original Svartpilen if you go back a while, the lower displacement ones, those actually were positioned a little bit more off-roady, if you remember. So logically, you know, as this bike has gotten bigger, you know, maybe its off-road sensibilities have kind of been pushed by the wayside, but also, you know, it's based on the 790 Duke, which is a tried and true platform. Like you said, it did have a short hiatus. We don't entirely know where it went for that, you know, that leap year, not leap year, gap year. That's the term. So maybe it was off adventuring. I don't know. Sure, it had some good life experiences while it was, you know, just kind of doing its own thing. But it is back, and you know, talking about the KTM displacement ladder is a totally different concept. So I think the first thing that we should sort of establish is what is derivative from the 790 and plays a role here, and what isn't? Because visually, it's a massive departure from the KTM, even though this is still a Kiska-designed bike, correct?
Yeah, you know, it's all under the Pure Mobility umbrella. And so, yeah, it's all from the same design house. There's only a few minor things that are the same about the bikes. Let's say the engine is the same, the suspension is the same, the frame is the same, the swing arm is the same. The specs are almost exactly the same. So other than that, it's completely different.
Yes, and I always consider the engine, frame, suspension, and swing arm to be very minor things on my motorcycles, personally speaking. But continue.
Well, in this case, they kicked out the rake a half degree to kind of slow down the handling. They put on those Pirelli dirt, we'll call them dirt track tires, because that's kind of what they're inspired by. So they have the Pirelli dirt track tires, which also kind of slows down the handling compared to a higher traction pure street tire. And it has, you know, a different tank seat. You know, that's all different to give the bike that different look, headlight. So they kind of put this different skin on it, and they make a bit of changes to the, you know, geometry by, again, different triple clamp to kick out the front end. But generally speaking, this bike is intended to be kind of a stylized version of the KTM 790 Duke. I mean, you know, if you look at the Duke, a lot of people like the way it looks. I like the way it looks. But some people think it looks too transformery, it's too weird. You know, they don't like the insect look. And so this gives them something else to look at. You know, it gives them a different kind of appearance, different kind of attitude. This is the 79 Duke is pure street bike. You know, you look at that, you think, man, I'm going to go in the canyons. I'm going to go take a track day. I'm going to go race around. This bike definitely is a bike that you could, you know, ride around town and people go, oh, look at that cool bike. You know, it's that kind of, you know, kind of style oriented motorcycle. So that's kind of where all the Husqvarna, Svartpilen, and Vitpilen bikes are about, is that they still have the performance attributes of the KTM Dukes, but they're put in a way that is more familiar, you know, or gives the bike more of a unique style instead of just looking like a sport bike. And there's a lot of sport bikes out there. These bikes don't really look like anything else that you can buy. And so that's kind of the position for them.
Yeah. So on that note, because, well, the main changes are going to be visual, and then of course the seating position and things like that, let's just go ahead and talk about comfort and utility. Now, you guys were in France, and you obviously rode some canyon roads at a pretty good clip. The Husqvarna and KTM lead riders specialize in that. But you guys also did some urban riding too. So, you know, if someone were to buy this bike based on its style, and say they weren't your average high performance rider, are they still getting a bike that's totally usable for your daily rider activities? What's it like, you know, in terms of raw comfort?
Yeah, I mean, the bike's super comfortable, complete upright, naked bike, you know, completely natural seating position. So there's no kind of like leaning over or any kind of height foot peg thing. Just you get on the bike and everything, you know, the foot pegs, the grips, the seat, it's all where you want it to be. It's got kind of a nice flat seat, not like a super comfortable cushy seat, but I kind of like hard seats, so I'm good with that. But it's also wide, and like I said, it's like kind of like sitting on an upholstered and padded board. And that doesn't sound good, but it actually works for the bike. Riding around town, super easy, especially because it has the three power modes. If you want, you have the sport mode, which is sporty, and then you have the street mode, which is still, it's reasonably sporty, but it just slows down the throttle response a bit. So if you make any kind of mistakes, or that, if you're riding around town and you give it a little gas, you're not going to like run into anything. And so it gives you that kind of extra little cushion. And, but for me, I was totally happy riding with a sport mode in town. You could just, it's not abrupt. It's not out of control. It's not fast. Unless you want it to be fast, it's easy to modulate the speed. Yeah. If you get on the throttle hard, it's going to go fast. And that's kind of where the big difference is between the two modes. If you're just kind of rolling on the throttle, the difference between sport mode and street mode is not that big. But if you get on the throttle really hard, the street mode will slow things down as far as acceleration, whereas the sport mode, it will say, oh, you want to go fast? Well, let's go fast. And so that's where the difference really in the modes is about, is more like if you are aggressive with the throttle. If you're not aggressive with the throttle, it's fine. As we know with some bikes, and usually it's the bigger, more aggressive, leader bikes plus sport bikes, even if you just crack the throttle, it wants to launch. This bike isn't like that. It is a 790 twin, so it's not like it's a, super high horsepower bike. So, but although it puts out 105 horsepower, which, that's nothing to sneeze at, but down at the bottom, it's a lot of torque. It's a motor that's very common these days. It has power just about from idle to red line. That's just really smooth. The torque curve is super flat. They always talk about, I don't know the exact numbers, but 80% of torque from 3000 to 9,000 RPM. This is that kind of bike. Whereas wherever you roll on the throttle, there's plenty of pull. There's nothing tricky about riding it. It's super easy to ride, and it still has the horsepower up on top, so that if you're out in the canyons and up in the hills of the south of France, that the bike hauls, and it will go as fast as the roads will allow you to go. I mean, the roads that we rode in France were a little intimidating for me, because they were almost, I'd say the majority of them in the hills, in the mountains, which are kind of the sub-Alps of France, are 1.5 lanes. There's no center line. So you're constantly going around blind corners, and you don't have that center line to kind of give you at least a little cushions. Yeah, I know people will cut lines, but when there's not even room for two cars, it's a little hairball. But the people leading the ride seem to be comfortable with that. And since I hung around in the back, by the time cars saw me, they were familiar that there were motorcycles on the road. So I was able to, hang with those guys. But man, I would not have wanted to be up front. So have you ever been on one of those rides?
Not in that particular area, but just on the MT09 launch that we did up in Northern California, up in the Redwoods. There's a handful of roads that are one lane, and they get about as wide as a driveway in certain parts. So I can completely sympathize. I mean, yeah, it's not great, especially when you're kind of throwing yourself into a corner and you go, I don't know if this is a hairpin or not, or if there's a car there, or... So you just start hugging the mountain wall, basically. And back when we rode this thing originally, the 790 engine, I should say, when we first got a taste of it with the 2019 KTM 790 Duke, and then it eventually started propagating in the 790 Adventure models and things like that. And the 790 Adventure is still around, right?
Yes, it's back. It's another one of those bikes that disappeared. But as now that they're, they've moved the 890 to 990, that leaves room for the 790.
Yeah. Well, there's no 990 Adventure yet, but ostensibly there probably will be. So at any rate, when we first rode that bike, it was one of the most exciting parallel twins at the time. And it was also KTM's first parallel twin, interestingly enough. So it's really set them down this path. And you have an engine that's decidedly sporty, but also easy to handle. So when you're talking about situations where you're on these one lane roads that are probably very, very fun, but at the same time, you need to have your wits about you. It's good to know that you can handle the horsepower underneath you without being too hesitant of it, we'll say. That said, talk about the shifting and just its overall kind of feel at this point. Because when we rode the 790 way back when, it was smooth, but it liked to be revved out. So there was kind of a playful eagerness that really worked for a sport bike. However, your top end, typical for a parallel twin, it would taper when you start getting, you know, maybe 1,000 or so revs away from the red line. But anyway, just talk about the general smoothness of the thing. Is it kind of rattly? Is it, you know, this, or, you know, how's the shifting? The odds and ends bits, you know what I mean?
The motor has a 285 degree crank. Now we're used to 270 degree cranks, which is kind of a, you know, normal number to split. So for whatever reason, the KTM engineers decided to move it just to 285. You know, it's kind of like going to 11 maybe. And so it gives it a little bit of that offbeat rhythm, you know, V-twin-ish rhythm. So it's not like a super smooth motor like a 180 degree twin would be, but it's not like rattly at all. It's a well built, you know, although it is built in China, which, you know, some people won't like, but, you know, as I always tell people who complain about that, I said, your iPhone was built in China, or your, you know, Android was built in China. So things can be built in China to whatever spec you like. And this bike, the motor is built to a spec that if somebody didn't tell you it was built in China, you'd never know. You wouldn't even think about it. You'd say, oh, this is an Austrian motor. It's fine.
Yeah. Beyond that, it's a motor that's been on the market for a number of years at this point. So it's tooling and things like that are pretty well established, as well as any bugs that need to be worked out of the engine. At this point, it's been on the market since 19.
Right. So as long as you're willing to like keep an eye on quality control, you're good. And so the motor is not smooth in the traditional 180 degree crank smoothness, but it's still smooth within the 285 degree firing order process.
And the 180, we'll typically see that from you're referencing the Japanese parallel twins, correct?
Some of them.
Okay.
Not the Yamaha, but yes, on the Kawasaki and the Honda. 270 degree has become almost the standard now. You know, it used to be every parallel twin was a 180. But it's kind of moved into people like that feel of the 270. So it's that, you know, that offbeat thump. So that's kind of more normal. Now, I can't claim to feel the difference between a 270 and a 285 degree crank, but it is 285 regardless. But it's smooth enough. It's got two counterbalancers. So, you know, you're not feeling any sort of excess vibrations through the pegs or the grips or the seat. So it all good there. As you pointed out, when you rev it up, it starts to flatten out the top. So you want to shift when it comes time to shift. Quick shifter standard. Like any quick shifter, it works. The harder you're revving, the better it works on the upshifts. On the downshifts, it's completely, you know, you just jam down as hard as you want. And KTM, it has a slipper clutch. So even if you're downshifting quickly, it'll stop doing that. If you get the tech pack, which is their, it's about $500, the upgrade that adds some adjustments to traction control and wheelie control. It also has the engine compression braking electronic changing, so that will even less likely it's going to skid on downshifts. Now, I didn't have any problem with, you know, skidding the rear wheel or backing it in. That's not the way I ride. I ride in a more traditional manner. But I could shift down there. The only deceleration issues I had was on the with the ABS, and it has cornering ABS. And I typically, when I'm riding, I do not engage cornering ABS, but on this bike, I engaged cornering ABS a number of times. In addition to, like, I come into a corner really hard. And as you mentioned, you don't really, on these roads, the way they're built, you have no idea really what the rest of the corner is going to look like. And sometimes it's a decreasing radius corner, get on really hard. I activated the ABS, I would say, more times in one day than I've ever done before on any bike. Now, part of that would be because I was riding super aggressively, so I'm more likely to do it. You know, if I'm riding at a, you know, a casual or just medium pace, I'm, you know, I don't need to, you know, get on the brakes hard. In this case, you know, I'm with a group, need to hang with them, got to ride more aggressively, going on the brakes hard. Now, the ABS, having said that, it's not like a horrible feel, but it's just something where you feel it working. You know, it's not like clunk, 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 clunk. It's just like pulse through both the brake pedal and the brake lever. So, you know, and it's good. And it's, for me, every time that engaged, I was happy to feel that, like, oh, I'm getting like the most out of the braking that I can.
And importantly, you're not getting that freewheeling ABS sensation, because we've both experienced that, where you grab the brakes and it says no mas.
Yeah, there's the big pulse. The pulses are really long and big. Now, this is not like that. It's much more, like I said, you feel it through the controls more than you feel it like through the tires. And speaking of the tires, it has those Pirelli MTs. You know, it's my feeling that those tires, which are on that bike for one reason, it's because they look cool. It gives them that, you know, that, as they say, scrambler inspired look. You know, it's like, hey, look, these are kind of off-roady tires. They're kind of knobbly, as Pirelli calls them. So they don't have as much of a footprint, you know, the gaps between, you know, they're not even sipes anymore. They're gaps, you know, between the knobs. So there's not as much rubber on the road. So there's going to be, you know, a little bit more likelihood that you're going to engage the ABS on the Svartpilen 801 than you would on the 790 Duke.
And did you also try the Supermoto ABS mode, because that disables ABS in the rear?
Right. For me, I wanted to have the ABS on because I was riding really hard, and I was not, you know, when you're riding in a foreign country, you know, you don't want to crash when you're at home, but at least you're at home. When you're thousands of miles in a, you know, 10, 12 hour plane flight away from home, I am not interested in crashing. So I'm happy to have the traction control dialed up a bit. The traction control is fixed if you get the bike in standard mode or standard condition. Now, if you add the tech pack, then it gives you the 8 levels of traction control plus off. And, so whereas on the standard one, it's just traction control, either on or off. And so that's pretty cool. I've used that setup before on different bikes. Now, when you're riding a bike that you're not familiar with, sometimes it's hard to move through the menu on the dash quickly. It's not that the Husqvarna has a bad one. It's the same one as the KTM. The interface is pretty good, but still, when you're making kind of like traction control and you haven't set it up exactly the way you want, sometimes you have to push a few buttons. One of the times I got going and I had it in the wrong, I had turned it on, but it was on the maximum traction control. So I was riding and I get on the gas and the bike just goes, rawr, 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 rawr. And I'm like, what? And I get on the gas kind of the next corner. Rawr, 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 rawr. And then eventually as you get past that, it then goes and accelerates fine. But it was like, I'm like, what is this bike doing? And I look, I go, oh, the traction control all the way up. So instead of trying to go through the menu and lift the traction control, I just moved into the sport mode preset mode, which is fine. And it worked great. So that was all good. So the traction control, when you have the control over it, is good, but you have to keep in mind that you can screw things up by putting too much in. You know, you think, oh, I have traction control, so I'm going to have more performance. Well, actually, you can have a lot less performance. It kind of reminds me of how, you know, Suzuki has their system. They don't have like the power modes. They only have the traction control. And you always think, well, that's kind of not really, you know, a power mode. But in this case, if you turn up the traction control enough, it cuts the power. Even when you're like not super aggressively coming on, it's just not going to spin up.
Yeah. So you could basically, in the custom modes, which, you know, KTM owners will be familiar with, that's what you get when you purchase the options to step away from those preset riding modes. You can basically make a super, I don't want to say beginner, because I wouldn't recommend a middleweight bike truly for a beginner, but a more new rider friendly mode that'll really, really tame this thing. But then I assume you guys started, you know, easing up on the nannies, so it can get a little bit wild when it wants to be.
Oh yeah, I mean, even if you turn the traction control to the minimum, it's not like the rear end spinning up. Again, with the 285 degree crank, and it's just a 790 parallel twin, and it doesn't have super sharp throttle response anyway. I'm not spinning up the rear wheel. I mean, kind of really the only time I think I would be likely to spin up the rear wheel was with there's some sand or oil or something on the road. And it's good to have traction control when that's there. But, you know, I have, the way I ride, I have pretty good throttle control. So I'm not just yanking the thing around. So maybe somebody who does that could spin up the rear wheel. But I was certainly, you know, after I was able to stop, get into the modes, you know, I think I put it on like two or something. I, you know, I didn't turn it off, but I put it in one of the very minimal ones, and it wasn't, you know, appreciably different. Once you get kind of past the midway point, I don't think you're in normal riding or even relatively aggressive riding, you're going to feel the difference. It's just, if you get into the really heavy traction control, that you're going to notice that the bike doesn't want to accelerate. You know, it's like, oh, no, the rear wheel moved just a tiny bit. And again, this goes back to that Pirelli. I think that the Pirelli is, you know, with less rubber on the road, naturally is going to be more likely to slip that little tiny bit that the traction control is going to recognize and go, oh, I better get involved here, you know?
Yeah. And so related to grip, we got the chassis. So it is the same steel tubular. It's not trellis, but it's a steel tubular KTM style frame. They love their tubular chassis, even in MotoGP. And then you have motocross, of course. You know, KTM is synonymous with the steel tubular and or steel trellis frame, depending on the model. And then you have that same lattice style swing arm, which is interesting because they've actually moved away from that on the 990, but that's still present on the, I think it's on the adventure bikes too. But yeah, that's a pretty common KTM hallmark.
Yeah, I mean, it looks cool. And so, you know, if it works, I think it's a great styling accent that fits in with the rest of the bike. The handling is, to me, completely intuitive. You know, it may be a little bit slower than the 790 Duke, but again, if you're on the street, for me on the street, I like to have a little bit of cushion. So if it handling a little bit slower, you know, that's fine. I can override using a different version of override. I can override that aspect of it by just riding more aggressively. You know, a half a degree isn't like a huge amount, but it just gives you that little tiny bit less nervous feel. The bike, not that the 790 Duke is particularly nervous, but you understand what I'm saying. You slow things down. So between the extra half degree of brake and the tires that are not as exacting as true street tires, the bike is more forgiving. It's a little bit less responsive, but you know, sometimes it's saying, hey, you know, you wanted to do that, but we're only going to do this much, and that's all you need. And you're like, yeah, you're right, I'm fine. So you're not as likely to make a mistake. Super exacting, demanding riders, well, I mean, they're going to buy the Duke anyway, because that's designed for them. And this bike is designed for the person who wants like a stylish, cool mount that they can still go at a great clip and they can ride around town and people will go, hey, where'd you get that cool bike? What is that? I don't even know what that is, you know? And so then you start a conversation and you got a new friend, and it's cool.
Yeah. And then the suspension too, that's an upgrade from the 790, because it's the WP Apex units. I think they may have been marketed as the same on the 790, but you have more adjustment from the 790 to this.
WP did what I've always wanted them to do, is instead of having like a fork, first of all, the fork uses compression damping in one leg and rebound damping in the other. Spring rates are fixed. There's no preload adjustment, which I know drives you crazy, but I'm the right weight and aggressiveness for the ride for that bike. So I didn't feel like, oh, I need to crank up the preload to get the bike higher or let it down so it would be, you know, softer, more comfortable. It was just right as it was. Anyway, they have the damping adjustments that you can do the rebound and the compression, but there's only five settings. Now those five settings are over a broad range. It's not like they have five settings and they're like five of the 30 clicks. They're like kind of like the 30 clicks, but so like you're making six clicks at a time, you know, with each one, so that you can tell the difference. Now, the rebound was, you know, exactly how I would want it. I did experiment with the compression. When I turned it up a bit, the bike was a bit firmer, but it made the bike a little bit, you know, I didn't like the feel quite as much. When I softened it up again, the bike would kind of cush down a little bit more than I would like. If you were riding around town a lot, you'd want to, you know, soften up the compression. And if you were riding really aggressively, which I was, but I didn't feel that need to be more firm. You know, by going a little bit softer, I had a little bit better feel, I felt for the front end. But that's all going to be like a personal thing. But what's good about it is you can turn these clickers. You can actually do it while you're riding, although they don't recommend that. And I, you know, I don't think you really need to do that, but you can. So they're big. They're kind of like little levers, and you know, and two-way levers. So you can adjust it either on the fly or when you stop.
Yeah, and that's the same as the dirt bikes too. They've always had the toolest clickers on the forks, to where, you know, you don't have to break out a toolkit or you know, screw around with screwdrivers and things like that, which is, I think that's a really good feature for the damping adjustment. And I think it'll encourage owners to experiment with their suspension settings a lot more readily than other situations. I mean, you and I both know owners that, and I'm sure we were part of this, this sect as well, where in the beginning of your riding career, you're a little afraid to touch things. And because you have the buttons, well, you're going to push them. In this case, they are little wing nuts, but yeah.
Ruining the whole point to me is that the shock, if you want to make any shock adjustments, you need tools. And, you know, so you, if you want to have balanced suspension, theoretically, if you're going to adjust the front, you're going to want to adjust the rear. But in the rear, you have only rebound damping and spring preload, no compression damping adjustment. So, and again, you have to get a screwdriver out to adjust the damping and a bigger tool out to adjust the spring preload. So, you know, it's like when they do things halfway like that, I'm always a little disappointed. It's like, hey, if you're going to make it so this is easy to use, why not have like a, you know, a remote reservoir with a big clicker on it that you can turn with your hand while you're riding, just reach down there and go, duh, 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 duh. You know, I understand. And I mean, some bikes even have spring preload that is just a knob, you know, so it's doable. So they are willing to let you experiment with the front damping very easily, but the rear damping, the one, you know, one, the compression is fixed and the rebound requires a tool. So that kind of, you know, those two things kind of work against each other. But doesn't matter, if you want to adjust the fork and you want to, you know, in either direction, you can do it. It's easy. The clicks actually make a noticeable difference, which is much more beginner friendly than a 30 click design. So, you know, that's all good. And the suspension, I don't want to say it's on the soft side, because it's not, but it's very compliant. So, you know, in France, they have some of the cobblestone roads and the brick roads and, you know, rough roads. And the bike was always comfortable, whether I was out on the open road, on the, you know, freeway type, not really freeway, but high, you know, high speed two lane roads, or in the towns where things are bumpier, or in the canyons where the roads were mostly pretty nicely paved. The suspension was always doing exactly what I want. There was never like this bouncing around or, oh, what's it doing here? It was kind of part of the whole intuitive aspect of the bike. It's all nicely balanced, you know, the way the motor works, the way the handling, the way the bike responds, it's all put together nicely. So the bike feels the way you want it to feel. So it's kind of that extension of yourself where you just go where you want to go and you kind of know what you want, and your body automatically makes it do that, and the bike gets along with you perfectly and just does what you want it to do. It does what you want it to do without any sort of, you know, specific effort on your part.
Yeah. So who do you think this bike is for? Not in terms of, you know, the personality or style, but in terms of riding experience. Now, I mentioned earlier that I don't think I would personally recommend this for a true beginner, but where do you think this lands on our kind of skill spectrum, if you're dividing it into the traditional three of beginner, intermediate, and advanced?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great second bike. I'm with you. I like people to start off on like 250s, 300s, 400s, maybe even a 500 at the most to get going. It's like, if you're going to make mistakes, have a bike that's not going to punish you for those mistakes, or going to punish you as little as possible. A 790 by a company, you know, that is known for performance, this bike will go fast. Now, if somebody bought it, they put the tech pack on, they dialed up the traction control really high and put the, you know, the lower throttle response, a pretty novice rider could ride that, you know, you could do it, you know, but that would take a really mature one. Somebody who's like, hey, you know what? I'm just starting. I'm going to set all these things up so the bike has less performance. You know, most people don't do that. They're going to like want to crank it up and go as fast as they can. So it's for, I mean, the bike is more expensive. It's, I think, what, $1,700 more than the, was it 14 or 1700 more than the 790 Duke.
Yeah. And you do get a little bit more, like we mentioned, like first, the styling is dramatically different. And I assume the fit and finish is probably a bit better than the KTMs.
It's hard to say because it's a different look. You know, I don't have any problem with the way the KTMs are finished. And so this bike seems fine. I don't know that it's on even a different production line. So, you know, that's not really the aspect. But by having the additional price of the bike, you're more likely to get more mature riders. You know, the more you have to spend, the more you're like, I don't want to, you know, the farther you are in your life, you know. So if somebody was pretty smart, and they, you know, had taken classes or kind of knew what they were doing, I wouldn't say that they couldn't ride this as their first bike. It would be, and especially if you're a bigger guy, you know, if you were a little small rider, you know, it's not like the bike's big, but it's not small either. It's not like a, you know, a CB300F or something, or, you know, it's a full size adult bike. But if you were a big guy and you said, you know, I don't need to fight. You could do it if you were smart enough to set the bike up right for your experience level. And it would give you room to grow a lot. I mean, you could actually, maybe that would be the only bike you'd ever want to have. You know, you can go fast on it and as fast as a lot of people ever want to go. If you turn it up all the way and turn off all the nannies and say, let's go. So bike has a wide range of users. So although I wouldn't say it's a classic beginner bike, it is usable or legit for the for the right beginner, but certainly for anybody that has experience on a smaller bike and has outgrown that and said, okay, I've mastered the controls, I know what I'm doing, I know how to deal with traffic, I'm ready to for something with more performance, this bike is a great next step. You know, some people might want to go to the 990, but that's a bigger step. And the 790, as I said, will satisfy the ultimate desires and capabilities of a huge, broad range of riders.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of on that note, the 990 is a much more serious motorcycle. Despite having never ridden the Husqvarna personally, I did spend a pretty extensive amount of time with the 790. And yeah, there is a big step between those bikes, just in terms of horsepower, delivery, size, ability, and the mentality that you need to approach those situations. The 790, I agree with you. The base platform from the Svartpilen 801 to the 790, same thing. There's a lot of forgiveness in that. That forgiveness does start to fall by the wayside as you increase displacement, you increase weight, sophistication, things like that, not only in terms of financial, forgiveness, because the bigger a bike is, the more expensive it usually is too. So,
yeah, it's kind of funny. You mentioned that. I was thinking the 990 should kind of be a Super Duke, that should be, that you have the 790 and the 390 would be Dukes, and then the 990 is a Super Duke, and then the 1390 is a Super Duke R.
Or maybe a Super Duper Duke.
Yeah, that's right. that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
I think just the R, you know how that is? Whenever you throw an R at the end, an R, you're serious.
Yeah.
An R on the bike. You know, it's like going up to 11.
And then Honda uses three R's, so then it's rubber R.
Yes, yes. R, Z, we know the letters that, you know, F is kind of in between, but R is race. And so, yeah, this is not the ready to race bike. KTM is the ready to race bike. The Svartpilen is the ready to be cool and still go fast, you know. And, you know, if you buy this bike and your friend buys the 790 Duke, you were going to be able to hang with him unless he's just a better rider. The difference in how well you'd be able to go would be the, like, 99% of it would be about the rider, not the bike. So you're not giving up a whole lot to, you know, to have style. You're giving up a few bucks. You're giving up a little traction. Although if you like this bike, but you don't, you say, you know what, I don't need those knobby tires. I'm just going to put normal street tires on it. You could put new tires on it that are even better than coming up with the 790, the Maxxis tires that come with the 790 Duke. So, you know, you might even be able to snatch a little, you know, away from your 790 Duke buddy by just doing a tire upgrade.
Yeah, easily could be.
And the bike will still look cool. You know, it's like the tires are not, you know, the linchpin of the styling exercise.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're at an MSRP of $10,899 in the United States, available, I assume, sometime relatively soon. This is the 2024 Husqvarna Svartpilen 801, as tested, went up to $11,319 because you had the
tech pack.
Pretty common nomenclature within the Pierre Mobility Group family, whether you're talking about KTM GasGas or KTM, or sorry, Husqvarna. But anyway, wrap it up. Okay. So what do you think about this thing? Good, bad, worse? I don't know.
Well, all bikes are great. That's the kind of funny thing for me. I, you know, on my little bio on the website, I always says, what's your favorite bike? It's the bike I'm on. And this bike is great. When I'm riding it, I just love riding it. You know, there's no moment on that bike where I'm thinking, oh man, I wish I was on something else. The bike is super easy to ride, super nicely responsive, you know, tons of confidence, good electronics. I look cool on it. And so the bike is, you know, if the kind of, this bike is all going to be really about, you know, you kind of have that base of like, okay, it's got that KTM base, the 790 Duke. Okay. Do I like the way this bike looks? If you like the way the bike looks compared to the way the 790 Duke looks, then this is the bike for you. You know, it's very much down to that personal taste. As long as you don't mind spending the few additional bucks to look cooler and to have a more exclusive bike. You know, part of the appeal of this bike is that it's exclusive. You know, it's like not that many people ride Husqvarna street bikes around. So when you have one, even if you go to a place like the Rock Store, you know, people are going to go, oh, Husqvarna, oh, that's cool. You know, whereas you came in on a KTM, well, there's 30 other KTMs probably in the parking lot and not a lot of Husqvarnas. So it gives you that, you know, it sets you apart from the other riders, and it shows that you're more sophisticated because I have a Husqvarna, and look at, you know, not everybody knows what that is. So, you know, so much of buying a motorcycle is like a psychological exercise. And this bike is part of that. But fortunately, you know, it delivers the performance, you know, comfort and capability that you want in any motorcycle. So, yeah, I just like, you know, the 2024 Husqvarna Svartpilen 801 is a truly enjoyable bike, completely great. And there's a lot of people that would be the perfect bike for.
Okay, well, that's it.
Okay, all right. Good talking to you, Nick, and we'll be talking about another motorcycle next time.
Ah, sounds good.
Who knows what? Okay.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Motos and Friends is brought to you by Arai Helmets. Arai is obsessed with every detail, even those that are unseen. There is such a thing as the Arai difference. For instance, if your experience has been that helmets are hard to get on, then try the Arai Contour X. It's been designed with a wider bottom opening for easier on and off. Once on, you'll be impressed at the amazing comfort of the Contour X, especially if you're into long distance touring. If you're into dual sport, then you'll want to check out the new Arai XD5. It's a completely redesigned helmet, and as with everything from Arai, every improvement is made with a priority for protection. One of the major changes is the new VAS-A visor system. It's been derived from the one originally developed for the Corsair X. The new visor is designed to maximize surface area to glance off impact energy, while at the same time offering easy installation and removal of the visor and peak. So, get to your local dealer and try out the full range of Arai helmets. you'll be instantly amazed at the fit and all-day comfort of any Arai helmet. You should also check out araiamericas.com if you want to learn more. If you've ever found yourself away from home and pining for a motorcycle ride, then Twisted Road just might be the answer. In this second segment, TJ Adams chats with Austin Rothbard. He's the creator of the app that he describes as the Airbnb of motorcycling. Although your first take might be skepticism that anyone would want to rent out their precious motorcycle, it turns out that there are plenty of people not only willing to do so, but who are doing it regularly. The app has been around since 2017, so it's an idea that seems to be pretty well evolved.
We're just like Airbnb, but instead of renting out someone's house, you get to rent out their motorcycle. So we connect riders coming in from all over the world with our bikes in the United States. I think we have 4,000 or 5,000 bikes on the site at this point, and we help them get on two wheels and go ride.
So how did the idea come about in the first place?
Well, have you ever been somewhere where you say to yourself, I wish I had my bike? Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, yes.
Right, right. Those six words, the minute you say that, then you say, is there something I can rent? Like if I, at the time I was in the Grand Canyon with my family and it was beautiful. And I'm like, I just want two wheels. And there was nothing close by. I mean, there was a rental 2 hours away on a big Harley bagger and it cost $200 a day, right? But I had three problems with that. I didn't want to drive for 2 hours to pick up a bike. I was a newer rider, so I couldn't ride a Harley bagger, a big bike. I didn't feel comfortable. And $200 was a lot of money to spend. And I just started thinking there's got to be a solution to this. And it kept happening over and over. And finally, I just wanted to buy a bike. I just said, you know what? I was at my mother-in-law's in North Carolina. I'm like, maybe I'll just buy something small here and keep it in her garage and ride when I come out here. And there were 952 motorcycles for sale in her area on Craigslist at the time. And I thought, well, there's another problem here. These bikes aren't being ridden. So if I start this company, I can solve two problems at once.
Well, I applaud you for seeing the gap in the market and actually doing something about it.
Thank you. And it fills other gaps also, which we didn't realize it until we started going. So there's four needs that it solves. The first is people traveling, right? The second one is if you don't own a motorcycle, maybe you had one years ago and you just haven't ridden it, you sold it. So this gives you a bit of ability to scratch the itch. The third is it's hard to test ride bikes before you buy them. So this is an option to try something. If you're ready to buy a Triumph Scrambler or a Panigale or a Road King, we have everything. So you could test ride it before you buy it. And then the last thing is if you just want to try another bike, you know, you may not want to buy another bike, but you may want to try it. Like, let's say you really want to try the Harley Pan America and see how that rides. And you're a diehard BMW GSA 1250 person. Then you can go ahead and try this for a couple of days without any issue. And you don't need to add another bike to your garage to do it.
Yeah, that sounds great. And you can sort of air your alter ego if you've got sort of a sports bike and you want to be a cruiser for a day or two.
Exactly. And you don't have to worry about any social pressure. You know, if you're a diehard Harley person and you see that the Triumph Thruxton looks beautiful, you don't have to worry about any social pressure of, oh my God, I can't believe you just bought a Triumph. You're just doing it for a couple of days. It's like an alter ego, like you said.
Fantastic. I can see so many benefits. As you say, if you're traveling, it sounds like you were out with your family, but if you alone want to go and ride, then you can just do that for a day or two.
Yeah, I was actually, I had a trade show I had to go to a few years ago in Las Vegas, and I live in Chicago, and I thought to myself, should I just ride there? Should I just ride there? And I looked at the map and the riding. I'm like, you know, the first, I don't know how many miles it is, but to get to Denver, it's really horrible riding. It's highway, it's flat. But once I get to Denver, the riding's going to be beautiful. So what do I do? And what I decided to do was I decided to fly to Denver. I rented a Triumph 800, Tiger 800, and then I rode to Vegas. I did my trade show and I rode back using a different route. And it was great. Because what we usually think of is when we're going to travel somewhere, if you're going to go, you're in LA. So let's say you have to go to Austin, Texas. You would think, I need to get my flight, my hotel, and my rental car all in Austin, Texas. But you wouldn't even think, maybe instead of Austin, maybe I fly into Dallas, rent a bike there, and ride to Austin. And that's a whole new model of thinking so that you can enjoy some more saddle time.
Yes, yeah, that's a great idea. You can just add riding into your trips that otherwise would be dull and boring.
Exactly.
Fantastic. And what about gear? If you are on, let's say, the said holiday and you don't have any bike with you.
Well, there are a lot of people who offer it as a service just to give to the riders. So they'll say right on their site, on the website, on the bike, if gear is provided, if what size helmets they have. We also have a messaging feature where any rider can message any owner and ask them any questions about the bike. So they could say, do you have gear? Do you have helmets? What size? We find a lot of people lending jackets and helmets and boots, believe it or not, especially to people who are coming from overseas. But when I travel, I do it really easily. I just travel in my boots and jeans, and then I wear my motorcycle jacket, which if it gets too hot on the plane, I just take it off and stow it above, and I carry my helmet. And that's really all, you know, that's all I need. So it's very easy to travel with just a little bit of gear to get you going.
If you're planning to ride and hire a motorcycle through Twisty Road, then you would take your gear with you. I was just wondering for a moment if you went away and suddenly decided to hire something.
And that happens. People get someplace and they never think that they're going to want to ride there. And it's so gorgeous. And they're like, man, I wish I had my bike. Where can I rent? Which is what happened with me. It wasn't planned, but I was in the Grand Canyon and I thought it would be great to. So that's what people do. And we have a lot of last minute rides happening all the time. Especially before a weekend with nice weather, you know, we get really busy.
How does the pricing work? Is there one price for all, or is it sort of good per bike?
Yeah, the owner of the motorcycle gets to choose the pricing. So if somebody, you could have two bikes that are very similar in the same market with vastly different pricing, but the owner gets to pick the price. Bikes can be as low as $50 or $60 a day. And then on top of that, you have to buy insurance, and we encourage you to pay for tire protection and roadside assistance. But depending on the price of the bike, maybe it's $100, $150 a day for 24 hours rental. It could get north of $200 if the bikes are priced very expensively, or if someone's riding a very, very, very high or very expensive bike, then the insurance costs are going to be higher.
Right. But this is nothing like, I know a lot of, as you mentioned earlier, hire companies charge a couple of $100 a day.
Yeah, we're not like that. You'll see a lot of bikes on our site for $100, $150, $70, $90. It's affordable.
And so you, as the rider doing the hiring, you sort out your own insurance.
It's through us. So when you choose the bike and then you go through the process, it'll say, which insurance do you want? And we have three types of insurance. And the difference in the insurance basically is whether or not you're going to pay a higher or lower deductible should anything happen.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, if you're the person renting your bike out, you want to make sure it's going to be covered or come back in one piece, but be covered if it's not.
Right. And we cover all owners up to $40,000 in damage.
If I wanted to rent out my motorcycle, how does it work from my point of view? How do I go about that?
Well, you would go to our site, and at the top of the page, when you get there, there's a button that says list your bike for rent, and it's going to take you through a few steps. The whole thing takes a few minutes, especially if you have some images, some good pictures. It only takes a few minutes to list your bike, and we're going to ask you year, make, and model. When you enter the year, make, and model, it searches our database and pulls that so that when your bike appears on our website, it's going to have all the specs to the bike, seat height, the power, all that stuff. And you just put a description in there, basic when you're available, what hours you're available to do a pickup and drop off, whether you're available for same day. Some people want some notice. Some people are okay with a same day ride. So we ask you if you're available for same day. And if so, how many hours of notice you need. So we put all this in and you submit it. And then our team reviews everything within 24 hours. And if it looks good and the pictures are good, we'll approve it.
And how do you make me feel secure that my bike's going to come back in good nick?
Okay, well, the first part is every single rider who rides with us has to go through our background check. And there are 15 points that we check for in the background check. Four of them are around fraud and identity theft. Nine of them are around how risky the rider is on the road. We look at their driving history. We look at riding history, suspensions. Do they have an endorsement? If they're a newer rider, we're going to require that they have an MSF card showing that they've taken a motorcycle safety class. And we're going to limit the power of the bike that they can ride if they're newer riders. And then we do two checks on criminal activity and to see if whether they're on the federal watch list for any shady activity. And that whole process takes under a minute. And so by the time you get the request to rent, to take your bike, they've already passed that. 10% of the riders don't pass, but that's okay. You know, we don't want them on the bikes anyway.
That sounds really diligent. That sounds great. And so if bike unfortunately doesn't get returned or is damaged, you have the insurance to cover that. You say up to 40,000.
Up to 40,000 on damage. If the rider happens to get into a small accident and hits another car, we cover that car. If things get crazy and the rider decides to sue everybody, we cover the owner as well in legal fees and other settlement costs up to $1 million. So we've kind of tried to protect everybody. I mean, I've got a family. And so the most important thing for me when I started it was I have to make sure I have insurance because I don't want to lose, you know, everything. And so our insurance is pretty bulletproof.
Fantastic. And if I were to say to you, I want to rent my bike out for $100 a day, how much of that $100 a day do I get?
You get 70, we take 30. And the way we pay you is you put your bank account information in through a secure link. And then 2 days after the ride's complete, we just put the money in your account.
Is that reliant on the hire of the customer paying, or do you pay anyway?
The customer pays when they make the reservation. And the reason we do that is we have to make sure that that bike is locked and not available for other motorcycle riders. So we require full payment up front. And when the bike comes back and you close out the trip, 2 days later, the money will be in your account.
And so where am I likely to need to drop my bike off if somebody wants to hire it? Or do they always come to your home? I mean, I wouldn't want people coming around.
Well, it depends. So when you're listing your motorcycle, you get to put in where the bike is located. And so you can put anything. You can put in the Target. You can put in the address of the local Target store or a gas station near your house. And just meet the rider there. And also, you can say whether or not you offer delivery and if you're going to willing to deliver the bike, and if so, what your fee would be. Or some people want it brought to the airport, you know, so they land at John Wayne or they land at LAX, and you can bring the bike to them, and you know that taking the Uber back is going to cost you $30 to get to your house. So you could say, well, I'm going to charge $50 round each way, so you would get $100. For delivering the bike.
Oh, I see. So you can factor that in if somebody wants delivery.
Yeah, if someone wants delivery, you choose your price. You pick two things: your price per mile away, and your minimum price. So if somebody is 3 miles away, you could say I'm charging $1 a mile with a minimum of $25. Let's say. So if you have to take it 3 miles, you'll get $25.
And are we talking road bikes only, or I don't want to get into a whole other subject, but is this road bikes only?
We only allow road riding. So we have a lot of adventure bikes on the site. We have some, but what we want is when someone submits their motorcycle for review from our site, we need to make sure it has a license plate. It doesn't have knobby tires all the time, and it's got turn signals. And when we know it has that, then it's on you can ride on the road. Unfortunately, we don't cover damages or liability in off-road riding.
Do you keep each party safe regarding damage? I don't want to harp on about it, but you know, bikes are precious. So do you take photos when you deliver it, and then the hirer takes photos? Do you both sort of coordinate?
The bike's condition is going to be the most important to the owner. Right? That's who cares about it. So the owner takes pictures right when the rider gets there. and they hit start trip on our app, and then they take a bunch of pictures and the rider can go. And then when they bring the bike back, they say, oh, you know what? I had a mirror right here and the mirror's scratched, or the mirror's gone, or the rider went to put the kickstand down and it didn't go down all the way and the bike fell over and there's some scratches on it. At that point, there's a button in our app that says report damage. They click that button and they just say what happened. And then we work with them and let them know what to do. Basically, they're going to go to a whole other link. They're going to upload images. An adjuster will contact them.
That's entirely instantaneous. So I didn't bring that into the conversation. This is all on an app. So this is really user-friendly.
Right. It's all user-friendly. We don't have a physical site. We don't even have an office. I started the company in 20... we went live at the very end of 2017, so call it 2018. And when we started, we didn't have an office. And I hired a few people and nobody wanted to go to an office. And I remember an investor saying, Austin, it's time for you to get an office and take this thing seriously. And, you know, enough of this work from home. And I listened to him. Like, I didn't want to spend the money. I thought it was a waste of money. And I also felt like if I had an office, it would be harder to attract talented people from all over the country. So I didn't listen to that investor. And like 6 months later, 9 months later, COVID hit and everybody adapted to how we've been working. So it was a non-event for us. We all just kept working.
Ahead of your times.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it is the way these days. I don't think anybody has an office, do they?
I don't know. And, you know, I've hired people without meeting them, with only having a video call like this. And I'll go 9 months, sometimes a year, without actually meeting them face to face. We had a get together a few years ago here in Chicago. And then we all rented bikes and went riding for a few days and got a farmhouse and stayed in. And it was kind of cool that first night because we hadn't all met each other. So there were a lot of people meeting each other for the first time.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you could meet a lot of friends using your app. You could coordinate with other people who are doing the same, hiring just to go for a ride.
And the owners and the riders form a bond. So it's pretty fascinating, right? Sometimes riders bring back the bike in better shape than they got it. We've had people say that the bike was clean as can be when they brought it back. We've heard people bring back a bottle of liquor for the owner. We've had owners drop a bike off at a campground, put it in their truck and take it to them at a campground if they needed it before we even incorporated delivery. And a lot of owners will say, okay, here are the roads you need to take and here are the landmarks I suggest going to. And they give them all sorts of guidance. So you know how great the motorcycle industry is and how tight-knit it is, but you don't know who these people are, where they are, where they live. And this really helps unlock the community so people are meeting each other.
That's fantastic. Yes, because you're naturally informed about your own area and you're enthusiastic. You want to share the lovely roads that you ride on, et cetera.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. People who do this are happy that they get to make a little bit of money. You know, they can pay an insurance bill. Some people have paid off their bikes and purchased another bike and have that on the site also. But they also do it out of a love for the community, and they want other people to love their bike and the roads they go on as much as they do.
Fantastic. I'm really pleased to hear that there's so much communication between the person renting the bike out and the person hiring the bike.
Yeah, there's a ton. And often you'll see that happen before the rental's even put in. And the rider and the owner will start texting and say, oh, you know, I want to come in on Thursday, but I'm finalizing my plans. Your site shows that you can't have the bike available till 6 p.m., but I'm looking at a flight that comes in at 8 a.m. Could you make that work? No, I can't. I work on this shift in the factory. I can't make it work. Actually, maybe you could pick it up in the factory. And they're talking before they even put the rental request in. Just to do some basic coordination.
Yeah, I'm grinning away because I know how friendly motorcycle people are.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. It's good to see.
Have you had any notoriety, any famous people or people of note using your services?
Oh, geez. I'm sure we do, but I don't know about them. But sometimes every now and then we'll have like people, this guy plays in this band and they'll let us know and they're on tour. And so we get some interesting people, but nobody that I know that's extremely famous, not yet.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's actually that's part of the whole thing about motorcycling. You can remain pretty anonymous. Everybody's.
You can remain anonymous. And we have some riders who have decided that they're not going to buy a bike because it's too expensive. And maybe their job is a little bit insecure and they don't know whether they're going to be around if they're going to be fired or not or what's going to happen. So they just rent with us. We have people who ride. We have people who've ridden 15 times in the last 6 months with us. And they just take a bike every weekend or every few weeks and they try different bikes out. They'll ride this bike one time, the next time they ride. Then we have other people who use it the way that you or I might use a hotel. So let's say every time I go to Boston, I love staying in the same hotel. We have people who every time they go to Nashville, they rent the same bike from the same owner and they meet him again and they go riding. And the owner has no, there's no benefit to the owner to go around us to just say to the rider, hey, next time, just call me directly and you can take my bike. Because if anything happens to that bike, the owner's not covered unless it goes through our site. They can basically go away and never come back. And
Then you would only have your one customer. I mean, if you try to do that, you couldn't kind of then come back to Twisted Road and say, put my bike out. And you'd go, well, you're the person who's decided to go direct. So no
I
thanks.
know, I know. So there's a lot of risk there for the owner to do that. And we put it right on the site in the conversations. We say, don't, if someone asks you, make sure you're, as an owner, go through the site. Don't, because otherwise you're not covered by insurance.
It sounds like it is a really hassly sort of a deal that's going on here, and but you've ironed out all those hassles and possible glitches for the hirer and for the renter.
Right. We look at it as we really have two customers. And we have to make sure that both people have an incredible experience. And it sometimes can get tricky. So here's an example of something that gets tricky. I'm going to give you an extreme example. Okay. This is really wonky. A person was riding a sport bike in Florida, and he contacted us and said that a part of the fairing just flew off the bike while he was on the highway. Okay, so we don't know if that's the rider did something or if the owner did something, and we don't know who's at fault. So at that point, we tell the owner, go ahead and put in a claim. The bike didn't come back the way it should have, and the insurance company will look into it. And after a couple of days, the insurance team came back and they looked at those pre-ride images, and they said, this fairing right here was tied onto the frame using zip ties. And so, because the owner had done that, we can't take any responsibility. They weren't attached. It wasn't attached in the right way. So we leave it to the insurance company to figure out those dicey situations. Because again, we have two customers, and we don't want to upset. We don't want the rider to be held responsible for something he didn't do, or the owner to be held responsible for something that she's not responsible for. So we're just really careful there.
Yeah, that makes sense because you're representing both, and at the end of the day, the insurance company are the experts on that side of things. That's what they do.
That's exactly right. And we do a really good job of keeping everyone happy. If you look at our site and find any motorcycle on there that's been ridden, you're going to see incredible reviews. And not reviews just like, when you go to eBay, you'll see something that says, A plus 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 seller, like no hassles, whatever. Ours are paragraphs, reviews that just keep going on and on about the bike, about the owner, about the rider. We let the riders can upload photos to so that when you're reading this, you're thinking about taking out a I don't know, a Suzuki SV650, and somebody's going on with the review, and then it'll show three or four pictures of from their ride when they were out riding it, and you'll see someone else review it with more pictures, and you get to see like all the places this bike has been. It's really cool.
Do you follow those reviews? If somebody's getting a load of crap reviews, do you address that and go, what's happening here?
Yeah, we almost never, our reviews are 98% of them are five star. Then we have a few that are one star. The people who are one star usually had a bad experience with the bike or the owner, and we know about it before it happened because they're texting us or they're emailing us that something's not right. So we address those up front. Absolutely.
Reviews are crucial. I mean, I don't know. We have about 70,000 listeners a week here. So speaking for myself, I always check reviews. I use a lot of apps for different services, and the reviews are my go-to, you know, sort of 5 reviews or so and get a general feel.
Right. Well, what we do is we have there in the site, there are 3 types of reviews. The rider and the owner rate each other, right? But the rider also gets to review the bike. And because you can have a really, really great bike in pristine condition, well-maintained, but the owner was late and poor, not good at communicating, or vice versa. Or maybe the bike has a problem with the chain or something that needs to be addressed. So it gives you an opportunity to separate those. So those 3 happen on our site. And then we also encourage people to put Google reviews together, which talk less about the rider and the owner and the bike and more about the experience with Twisted Road. So you can go online. I think we have almost 1,000 reviews on Google. Like I think it's a 4.8 or 4.9 out of 5 is our score. And the people there who aren't happy, the people who have the 1 stars, you'll find those. A lot of those people are the people who got turned down from our insurance.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's why I read several and kind of make a judgment.
Yeah. I read every single review and I respond to every single one of them.
Yeah, I take the view that some people just have a dismal point of view of life in general. And
we had someone write a 4-star review last week or 2 weeks ago. And when I read it, it said that everything was good, except the bike wasn't exactly the bike I thought it was. Like on the site, it says this is the name of the bike, but it actually is the version RR or RS or R or whatever. And has a different riding position. And it's different. Like these are the 4 things on so the ride was fine, but it wasn't what I thought. And so the minute I saw that, I had the team go ahead and reach out to this owner. We changed the bike on the site so it was represented fairly. And then we went to the rider and we gave the rider, I don't remember, $25 in their account to come back for the next time they ride.
Nice. Do you think you've spawned any micro businesses? Have you heard of any of your people who rent their bike, then suddenly renting 2, 3, 4, 5 bikes? Like you could buy bikes, rent them out, and say, pay them off.
Yes, absolutely. Especially in the nicer climates. We see that in Vegas. We see that in LA, Southern California, sometimes in Florida. We see these little businesses starting to pop up everywhere.
Wow. You've really started something.
It's kind of cool. So right after I started the company, about 6 months in, we had somebody from Iceland reach out to us, and there was a specific BMW adventure bike that he wanted to rent for 4 weeks, and he wanted to ride from Washington, D.C. one way to San Francisco. That's what his plan was. In fact, this gentleman was riding with his wife all the way around the world and he would just rent different BMW adventure bikes, and that's what he would ride. Okay. So I was really excited about this. This is huge for us. And I remember saying to the owner before he approved the ride, hey, so are you okay with this? Like, we didn't have all the communication things and we didn't have the messaging and all those things. We weren't part of our site at that time. We were still so early. And I said to the owner, I said, Carter, are you okay with him taking your bike one way? I said, I'm sure we can pay to have it shipped back. It won't be a problem. He said he's fine with that. And the owner of the bike said, you don't even have to worry about that. I'll fly out and I'll ride it home myself. So the day comes when they're going to have, when he comes into town with his wife, the 3 of them went out to dinner together. The rider took the bike and about 3.5 or 4 weeks into the trip said, I want to add another week to it. So we extended it for another week. And sure enough, they flew out and they met, I think, near the Golden Gate Bridge. We have a really cool picture of him handing the keys back. So that was a great early experience of ours.
Yes, yeah. He obviously loved it. He hit the nail on the head and he thought, this is going to work.
Yes, yes. And we have, you know, a lot of people are when they think about you know, maybe they don't want to rent, or maybe it's new. In fact, most of the people who ride with us, the first time they ride with us, they've never rented a motorcycle before. It's new to them, right? And that's because bikes are expensive to rent and there's not a lot of options. So once we unlocked that, it became easier. People are new to using us. And if you want a first time ride bonus or benefit, if you go to twistedroad.com/REF/twisted, we give you 20% off your first ride or a free day for a longer ride. So if you're riding for 4 days or more, we'll give you a free day. And so that's a good, it's the Twisted is the referral code. You can also just log in and it says, do you have a referral code? You type in the word Twisted and you get that benefit.
Fantastic. That's great.
And we have one other offer that I think is pretty cool that I like to talk about. It's called the 1-1-2 free. And the way it works is after you've ridden with us 2 times, we give you a day for free. So it just has to be 2 full-priced. They can't be a referral code or anything, but 2 fully paid rides. After your second one, we give you a day for free. Then you ride 2 more times, we give you another day for free. And so we have people who go and they'll rent a motorcycle for, you know, $75 for the day. They rent another one for $95 for the day, and they get a free day and they go and take a $250 motorcycle off for the day. And that's fine with us because the program works and it brings people back and they love us.
Yeah. Well, if you're getting repeat business from, you know, that's a proof of the pudding that it's actually working.
Yeah. Yeah. It's working. It's fun to do. We have something that's really cool also on our site, which is we have an events area where you can go to any motorcycle on our site, or you can go up to the menu in the upper right corner and you could see events that are in the area. So let's say you're scrolling through and you see a bike that you like. After you click into the bike to see all the details of that bike, it'll list all the local motorcycle events that are happening. And you can click in there and find out more about where it is and what the times are and all that stuff.
I was just actually thinking to mention that. Do people who you go through phases in life, family happens or what have you, when you don't have a motorcycle, if you want to go on a particular ride like the Distinguished Gentleman or Ride for Kids?
Yes, we see that all the time. Toys for Tots, big day for us. We get a lot of people for Daytona. We get a lot of people for MotoGP. You know, people traveling to an event and they decide they want to go there and get a bike. Well, the first time we had a person in Dallas who had a Panigale. And I remember we had somebody from the Northeast who wanted to rent this Panigale. And I remember being so afraid, and it was early, you know, so early in the business, and so many things scared me, but this person wanted it. And it turns out that this rider, he had a Panigale already. I think he had an 1199 or something. And he was flying. He didn't want to fly to Austin for MotoGP, but he wanted to fly to Dallas, rent this Ducati Panigale and ride in and have his to be part of the Ducati experience at MotoGP. And so he was able to do that through our company.
That's great. Yeah, that really does open everything up for people.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Or you're in Southern South Florida and you want to ride to the Keys. Like there's all these beautiful places all over our country.
And it sounds like you have got a full range of motorcycles. You've got from...
We do. We have, I don't know what the oldest bike on the site is at this point. There was a time where we had an Indian from 1923 or something, but I don't think that's on the site anymore. But there are a few vintage bikes. I think we're on like 4 of the Hawaiian Islands. We're in Alaska in a few locations. I mean, we got all sorts of bikes.
And you're talking thousands countrywide?
I think it's somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 at this point. And that number is changing a lot. So, you know, we might get 6 people listing their bikes today. 1 or 2 people sold their bikes. So that they take them off. In fact, we have a place on the site where if your bike is for sale, you can let us know it's for sale. And then we have an area of the website where you can click show me only bikes for sale. So if you're in the market for a bike, you can say, oh, this bike's for sale. I'm going to take it for a spin for the weekend, see if I like it. And if so, I'm going to buy it. And we have the list price there and everything.
That's great. That's awesome. Try before you buy.
drive before you buy. Actually, I was selling my bike a few years ago, and I got an ad on like Cycle Trader and one in Craigslist or whatever, and I put a link to my motorcycle in there, and I said, try this bike before you buy, rent it on Twisted Road, and then, you know, see if you like it. And the first person that actually rented the bike took it for the weekend, and he texted me from the road saying, I'm buying this bike. The first person who came to see it texted me. He's like, I also want a helmet. Do you have an extra helmet? I'm like, you can take the one you're wearing. You know, he was so excited. Like, every time I stop the bike, people are giving me a thumbs up. He's like, I love this thing.
You must be the only people who can offer that service of being able to ride a bike. That's a lot of the nerve-wracking thing about buying a motorcycle. You can't test ride.
You can't test ride it before you buy it. And a lot of people who if some owners will say, all right, I'm selling my bike. You want to test ride it? I need all the cash up front. You know, give me the $9,000 and then you can test ride it. And if you don't like it and nothing happens, I'll give you the money back, which is kind of a tall order. But they're just trying to protect themselves because they don't want the risk of anything happening.
And before you'd started Twisted Road, how did you get into the world of motorcycles?
I was kind of a newer rider. So I learned how to ride, I think, in like 2015 or 16, and we started this in 2017. So I was a newer rider and found this big pain point in the industry. Before that, I was an executive in corporate America and did it for like 20 years. And I ran a handful of companies, and actually I've run businesses before this between as much as half a billion in annual revenue and as many as 1,000 employees around the world. And this is the first time I've ever run anything where there's no sales and I have no employees. And I have to start it from the ground up and build it. And that was an exceptionally difficult but fun experience to go through.
It is an unusual business. You have no stock.
There's no stock. I can't tell you how many times I've been through inventory calls in my prior life as a president where we would build something. Let's say we were selling plates. So we would buy all these plates. And after 5 years, we had new designs and nobody wanted the old designs anymore. But we had all these plates in inventories. Like, what can we do to get rid of these? How can we sell them? Like, I don't have to worry about any of that. We don't have to worry about where do I store them? Who maintains them? None of that. Don't have to worry about any of that. How much are we going to get when we sell it? How much can we buy it for? None of that. We don't have any of the headaches that come with ownership.
That's great. I love your insight. You've really hit a sweet spot.
Thanks. I think so. And it's fun. You know, it's in the industry. It's fun.
And you're dealing with nice people.
The best. It's really when I'm feeling exceptionally stressed about work or about life, I can go through and read our reviews and immediately turn around my attitude because it's so fulfilling to see all the people that are having these experiences that they wouldn't have had without us. In fact, if you go to follow Twisted Road on Instagram, you're going to see people posting their images of their bike and their ride all the time. And I think it's pretty interesting because I've never, ever posted a thank you to any company. I've never had a Coca-Cola and said, thank you, Coke, for this delicious beverage and tagged them. I've never done that. And yet people are tagging Twisted Road all the time because the experience is so positive. So our Instagram site, it's all people, it's all pictures that people have sent us. The whole page is just reposting stuff that we've been sent.
Terrific. I will put links to your Instagram, Facebook, and your website details in the show. So for anybody listening, don't panic. You'll be able to see those. So do you ever go hiring bikes yourself from all over the place?
Whenever I travel, every work trip I take, I rent something. I looked recently, I think I've ridden something like 16 bikes through our site or 18 bikes. And I've had different, I've had so many opportunities to ride different things. I rode the BMW, the R18, that new cruiser of theirs. I'd wanted to ride that for a long time. And I had the opportunity to ride that. That was kind of cool. I've just ridden every brand. What is it? The FZ09 I rode once. And I was kind of surprised that I just love it. I love it. And more than the bike itself is I love meeting the people. Like, I just love meeting the owners and talking to them and listening to their experiences with the company and what we can do to get better, like all of it.
Well, you'd be a great fount of knowledge by now, because not many people will have had the opportunity to ride such a variety of motorcycles.
Right. I guess I just, like, I know what works for me, you know, but it may be different for someone else. And the thing that I like about our site is that when I'm in a certain city, there are certain bikes that may be better than others. So like I said, I took a Tiger when I was in Denver and riding to Vegas, like perfect bike for that. And I rented a Ducati Scrambler when I was in LA and was lane splitting and learning all that. And then when I did a long ride up and down the coast, the PCH, and I rented a Road King. So like I get a chance to experience these different bikes in different environments that are going to work.
And do you have a motorcycle of your own?
I do. I ride a Moto Guzzi Grisso. It's a little obscure. They stopped making them in 2017, but it's I don't even know the type of bike. It's got both classic styling and a sporty feel. It's an incredible bike. I think it's very similar to the R90, the BMW R90. It's a similar kind of look and feel.
It's good to describe things like that, because with our reviews, when we put our reviews on the website, there's a selection of editors and we ride different motorcycles and we put all the specs up for sure. Everybody gets the full fact. But it's really about how you feel when you ride it. And as you say, what the application is for that particular motorcycle.
Exactly. And we'll see when people rent, they'll say, we had a person rent something like 12 bikes in 2 months or something in San Diego. And his whole purpose was, I just want to ride them and figure out what I'm going to buy. I just want to see how they fit. I want to take them all long rides, see how it feels, the riding position. Do I cramp up? How does my ass feel after a long ride? Like all of these things, and just one after another, just to figure out what he wanted to buy.
Yeah, especially when you're quite a new rider, which you have been, as you said, you're a fairly recent rider, and you have these ideas of the image you want, how you want to look. You might want to look sporty and colorful, or you might want to look sort of tasseled and leather bound, and the bikes with that sort of thing. And then you actually do the ride and you're like, this is not for me.
It's funny you bring that up. So years ago I was the president of a boat company, and I was talking to one of the owners of the company about how he designs the seats. And in the smaller boats, they have a bench seat, so two people can sit next to each other. And as the boats get bigger in size, they don't have that anymore. They have one seat. It's a captain's chair, and it's just no sitting next to, you know, the person. So I remember asking, why do we have the bench seat where you can have two people on the smaller boats and the bigger boats only have a single? And he said, people who buy the smaller boats they're new to boating. And when they buy it, they think, oh, I'm going to have the beautiful girl sitting next to me as I go out on this boat. And then when they trade up, they realize that doesn't happen. And they just want to be comfortable by themselves. Then they have a single seat.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. How you have a vision of what you think you want the image to look like. And then how that evolves as you become more experienced with whatever the item is.
It's so true. It's so true. And who you meet up with and who you start riding with, that just affects things.
It does. It does. Yeah, it does affect things.
So have you got a next big trip planned?
I don't. I really want to go up to the Pacific Northwest. I want to ride up in the Seattle, in Oregon and in Washington State. I think that would be a really nice ride. I've done a few solo trips. The first one I took, I flew out to, I took my motorcycle from Chicago all the way down south. I went through like St. Louis, Missouri, and then I went through Tennessee, and then I took it east and I stopped at the Barber Museum, and then I hit Atlanta and then went north up the Blue Ridge Parkway, and then I came back and I hit something in Ohio. There was a vintage AMA Vintage Days or something I hit in Ohio on my way back. And that was my first overnight trip I ever took. And it was a 3,000-mile solo ride. And I did it for just gone for two weeks. I was gone for 2 weeks. I really want to ride Alaska. I've never been to Alaska. I'm dying to ride in Alaska. I've never been.
Right. That's interesting. Yes. Yeah. That would be a good one. I haven't been myself, so I can't.
What bike do you own?
I have two motorcycles, chalk and cheese. I have an Envy Augusta Brutale 800 RC, which tends to be great on the canyons and here in California. And then I have a Royal Enfield Interceptor, which is the laid back, you know, my sort of town bike and little country rides.
What do you ride more often?
Depends really on where I am. The Envy Augusta. I like the pose value of that as well. It's a real eye catcher.
I always find it fun when we start seeing the new model years show up. Like in 2023, when we start seeing the 2024 bikes, these are people who have just bought their bike. And the first thing they do is they put a brand new bike on our site. It just makes me feel really happy. Like we've built the trust. We've built the trust.
Yeah, that is real proof of the pudding. If people trust you with a brand new bike.
Brand new bike. And we I remember when I was starting the company, I was listening to a podcast with one of the founders of Airbnb. And he said, when we designed the site, we designed for trust. We made sure that everybody could trust us every step of the way. And so we thought about that as we were designing our site. Like, how do we design for trust? How do we make people feel comfortable putting their motorcycle on here? How do we do that? In fact, when we started the site, when I started the company, I decided to phase the rollout. And the first phase of the rollout of launching the site was you could only create an account and list a motorcycle. That's it. You couldn't search. You couldn't see what else was up there. You could only list your bike or just create an account. And the reason we did that is because if you were the first person on the site and you wanted to list your bike and you didn't see any other bikes listed, you're not going to list it. Like, nobody wants to be the first person, you know, in the gym during prom. So we had this for a month or two, and we got the count up to around seven. I think it was, we launched with 79 motorcycles. And that way, when we went live, there was not a lot, but enough that people could have confidence and trust in us that we have bikes on there and they can list them and not have to worry.
Yeah, that's very clever. You have to be able to get rolling with offering people, as you say, that trust, that security.
Right. It's interesting my perspective has changed. So when we first launched the site, we had two rentals in our first week, and then we had, I think, one the following week. And like, I was so excited back then that we had two rentals. There's two people in this country who like us and need us, and we're helping them ride, right? And we had one the following week. Then we had the next week was a zero. We didn't have any. I was like, I can't do this anymore. These weeks of zero, I'm like waiting every day for a rental to come in. It was killing me, right? Now, I don't remember the last time we had a zero day. You know, we're always getting rides. People are always coming to us. So, it's just, and in fact, when I go back and look back at those early times, I think if I knew how long it would take to kind of get this thing up and running, I don't know if I would have done it. You know, it takes a lot of time, effort, and energy, and confidence, and belief, and optimism, and craziness to start something like this.
Yes, you need to be supported generally with a patient person or two at home.
Yep. And I have that. My wife is incredibly supportive. Sometimes I think more supportive than she should be, but she's been amazing. The first person I told that I was going to do this was a mechanic who had worked on my bike before. And I said, hey, this is the idea I'm thinking about doing. You know, what do you think? And he said, Austin, that is the stupidest idea I've ever heard. And I once read that if everyone thought the idea was great, it would have already been done, right? So you kind of have to go into an industry when you start something where people think you're crazy, but you somehow see things that people don't see. I know that when Airbnb started their company, people thought they were nuts. Who's going to let someone else sleep in their house, right? So I remember when he told me this, and now I still see him. He's like, man, was I wrong? I mean, how are you guys doing? How's the business? Like, he gets it now. But it was we were breaking new ground in the industry.
It's marvelous. I mean, there are always worrying times and growing pains when you start something brand new. And this is not just a brand new business; it's a brand new idea.
Right. That's exactly right. And there are growing pains, and we learn a lot as we go. And at this point, there's not a lot of things that we haven't experienced and that we don't know how to resolve and handle. You know, we've had people abandon a bike, and we had to get the bike back, and you know, we got it back the next day for the owner. We've had people have a tire damage in the middle of nowhere. We have roadside assistance across the country. So all of these little things, as we go, we learn how to handle them.
That's what makes it such a great service to use, because if you're hiring the bike or if you're renting it out, you've got the security.
You've got the security. You're protected. And nobody in the country, in the industry that I know of, offers the same amount of protection that we do. $40,000 on a bike and $1 million on liability for the owner.
I can also see there are other opportunities now that you've built the business to such a stage for crossover, working with other companies. We had a lady on here who started Kickstands Up, and they purely list events. And believe it or not, there was not an app that coordinated all the events that are going on around the States. So if people want to find events, they can find it there. They can come to you and hire a bike. So there must be all sorts of companies now, and hopefully people listening who will think of other ideas. And
I hope so. We have some crossover partnerships with different companies. Komodo, who owns Cycle Gear, Revzilla, JMP Cycles, and Rever. We have a partnership with them. They have a program called the RPM program, which is a loyalty program within their company and allows people to build up loyalty points and use them across any of their brands. We have a program with them so that people who are in the RPM program of Komodo brands get benefits on our site. It's fun.
Are you going to make any changes? Is there anything that you've now found any eye-opening sort of glitches that you need to iron out, or are you going off in any other directions yourself?
Yeah, we're in a really good space right now where there aren't many things that need to be fixed in the business. But there are a few areas we're expanding that are slightly different than the primary rental business, but we're leveraging our insurance and technology to try things out. I don't want to go too deep into it because I'm still a little bit protective of what we do, but we're seeing some early success with some other programs.
Marvelous. That's fantastic. Well, it's been great chatting with you. It's a real interesting thing that you've got going here, and I applaud you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you as well. This was great. I'm glad we connected.
Lovely. Wish you all the best.
Thanks.